Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear from Mario Ritter, Ann Ball, Brian Lynn, and Dan Friedel. First, here is Mario Ritter.
Asian countries are increasingly concerned that popular anger in the U.S. and Europe might hurt their exports and lead to a global economic slowdown. Voters in industrialized countries are frustrated with job losses in industries such as steel and automobile manufacturing. Many blame the losses on globalization and free trade policies. These were reportedly major issues in the British vote to leave the European Union. They also have been energetically discussed in the U.S. presidential election. Some experts are calling these concerns protectionism, or seeking to protect or block off a country's market from foreign businesses. Frederick Newman co-directs Asian economics research for HSBC Bank in Hong Kong. He said, "Rising protectionism could throw sand in the wheels of the global trading system and so start to gum it up." The vote in Britain resulted in wild changes in financial markets around the world. Major East Asian countries were no exception. They reacted with short-term economic measures meant to stabilize their markets because of the June 23rd vote. South Korea ordered an increase in government spending. China let the value of its currency fall, and Japan has said it is considering taking measures if the value of the Japanese yen continues to rise. However, reaction in Asia to the heated disputes over trade in the West, especially in the U.S., has been somewhat muted. Peter Drysdale heads the East Asian Bureau of Economic Research at the Australian National University's Crawford School of Public Policy. He said anxiety in Asia is eased by the perception that a more thoughtful discussion will develop over time. The rhetoric coming out of the political campaign in the United States, of course, does disturb policy leaders elsewhere in the world, including Asia, Drysdale said. U.S. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump has attacked free trade agreements during his campaign. He called for renegotiating or withdrawing from the North American Free Trade Agreement, known as NAFTA, with Canada and Mexico. He also said he opposes the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That trade agreement includes the United States and 11 other Pacific countries. Trump has criticized trade deals, but he is not alone. The Democratic Party presumptive nominee for president, Hillary Clinton, also voiced opposition to the TPP during her campaign. She has, however, supported free trade agreements in the past. She spoke in support of the NAFTA deal as First Lady of the U.S. with her husband, former President Bill Clinton. He signed the agreement into law in 1993. Some experts see her change in position as a reaction to her opponent in the primary elections, Bernie Sanders. He has been outspoken in his opposition to trade deals. However, President Obama is hopeful that the U.S. Senate will approve the TPP after congressional elections in November. Economists said Asian countries could take further measures to open up their economies and increase investment in Western countries. Drysdale said this could ease anti-trade anger in the West. He added, that is already happening to some extent. Investors in India and China and elsewhere in the region are looking to put plants and investment into industrial countries and the United States in particular, he said. Frederick Newman of HSBC said American companies do complain of complex regulations blocking market access to Korea, although an agreement is in place. Officials in Seoul say South Korea has a trade surplus of about $10 billion with the U.S. But they note that South Korean companies invest more in America than U.S. companies invest in Korea. I'm Mario Ritter.
United States and South Korean officials have announced plans to deploy a U.S. missile defense system to South Korea. The officials said the deployment is to answer North Korea's nuclear and ballistic missile development programs. General Thomas Vandal is the chief of staff for U.S. forces in Korea. He and South Korean Deputy Minister of Defense Ryu Jae-sung made the announcement in Seoul. Vandal said the two countries had to defend themselves from North Korean weapons. He criticized North Korea's continued development of ballistic missiles and weapons of mass destruction. The missile system is called THAAD, short for Terminal High Altitude Area Defense. It can shoot down ballistic missiles before they hit their targets on the ground. On Friday, North Korea criticized the U.S. and South Korean agreement. China also expressed strong opposition to the planned deployment and urged the U.S. and South Korea to put a stop to it. The Chinese Foreign Ministry said the missile system is not helpful for keeping peace on the Korean Peninsula. It also said the deployment will harm the security of countries in the area, including China. In the past, Chinese officials have raised concerns that the THAAD radar system could be used to observe Chinese territory. The U.S. Department of Defense said in a statement that the only weapons to be watched will be North Korean weapons. The Russian government also criticized the planned deployment. It said THAAD will have irreparable consequences and will increase tensions in East Asia. South Korea and the United States opened talks about THAAD in February. That followed North Korea's most recent nuclear test and launch of a long-range rocket. U.S. officials say North Korea has continued to develop its nuclear and missile program in violation of United Nations sanctions. Last month, North Korea launched a partially successful test of a Musudan missile. That missile flew about 400 kilometers before falling into the sea. But there were signs the North Korean military had or is close to developing the ability to reach U.S. bases in Asia and on islands in the Pacific Ocean. North Korea is believed to have 30 Musudan missiles. The North Koreans also have close to 1,000 other Soviet model missiles. These missiles can reach targets in South Korea and Japan. American officials have said they believe North Korea has enough plutonium to make 8 to 12 nuclear weapons.
Almost every day, we hear about a new development in the world of driverless technology. But how will this technology change our lives when cars no longer need humans to drive them? Major automakers are now researching and testing driverless cars. Technology companies like Apple, Google, and Uber are also working to bring driverless technology to market.
James Anderson is a senior behavioral scientist at the RAND Corporation. He is also an expert on driverless transportation. He said the first stage of the technology is already here. The technology allows cars to change lanes, control speed, and warn drivers of hazards. The idea is that drivers first use these and then become more confident to use the technology more, he said. But the risk of that is that research suggests people tend to over-rely on the equipment and may or may not be able to jump back in and take over on short notice.
In May, a driver was killed while using the autopilot feature on a Tesla car. It was the first known U.S. death involving a car operating in self-drive mode. Officials said the crash happened in Florida when a tractor-trailer turned in front of the Tesla Model S. Investigators said it appeared the car's cameras failed to differentiate between the large white side of the tractor trailer and the brightly lit sky. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration said it is investigating the accident, as well as the design and performance of Tesla's autopilot system. The driver of the truck told the Associated Press the driver of the car was playing Harry Potter on the TV screen before the crash. The Florida Highway Patrol confirmed it found a portable DVD player in the car after the accident, but it could not confirm whether a movie was playing at the time of the crash.
Tesla's founder, Elon Musk, expressed condolences for the accident. Tesla said it was the first known death in more than 200 million kilometers driven with its autopilot system. Autopilot allows the car to steer itself in a lane, change lanes, and speed up or slow down based on nearby traffic. Tesla said the system is designed only to assist drivers who must manually turn it on. The company tells drivers that even when using autopilot, they need to keep both hands on the steering wheel at all times. Autopilot is getting better all the time, but it is not perfect, and still requires the driver to remain alert, Tesla said. Despite these dangers, autonomous cars are expected to greatly reduce accidents. Currently, about 90% of crashes are caused by human error. James Anderson said the big automakers have pledged to add anti-crash devices on all vehicles within 5 years.
Even though few accidents is good, Anderson said this would cause a lot of economic disruption. There's a whole crash economy that is dependent on the regular occurrence of automobile crashes. He said job losses would come in the insurance industry and in hospitals where crash victims are treated. In addition, other driving-related jobs would be hurt. There are millions of truck drivers, delivery drivers, taxi drivers, and other driving-related jobs in the U.S. A lot of those jobs are likely to disappear, he said. A California company already has plans to sell driverless kits for tractor-trailer trucks. The company, Otto, was started by former Google engineer Anthony Lewandowski. Just the thought of an 18-wheel truck speeding down the highway fully loaded with cargo makes many drivers nervous. But Lewandowski said the technology is very safe. He says the goal is to make trucks drive as much like humans as possible, but with the reliability of machines.
Carlo Ratti heads the Sensible City Lab at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. The lab studies how digital technologies are changing cities and how this will change how people get around in the future. The most exciting thing about a self-driving car is not really the fact that you don't need to keep your hands on the steering wheel. For us, the most exciting thing is that it's going to have a profound impact on mobility in our cities. Ratti said cars are now only being used about 5% of the time. Most of the time, they are parked and using up valuable city space. In the future, a self-driving car could give you a ride to work in the morning. But then the same car could be used throughout the day to take other people around the city. This car-sharing model would blur the lines between private and public transportation, Ratti said.
We could potentially share cars and rides better. That means a city where you could theoretically make everybody's destination in Washington or New York or Singapore a big city or a small city with 20% of the cars we have today. He said another major change could be the removal of traffic intersections. At that point, you could think about autonomous intersections. Intersections where vehicles do not need to stop at a junction, but they could keep going and simply avoid bumping into each other. Ratti said he believes driverless technology will lead to more efficient and sustainable transportation, but it will also leave questions about who will truly benefit. When you think about building a shared infrastructure, the question is, who's going to charge or bill other people? Who's going to enact different transportation policies? So it really becomes much more about how we're going to distribute the benefits of this new transportation system across society. Another big question is how ready the public is or will be to use driverless technology. Researchers at Carnegie Mellon University in Pennsylvania are reporting positive results with self-driving vehicles.
Lead researcher, Professor Raj Rajkumar, said it really does not take long for people to trust the car enough to let go of the wheel. They begin to see that the vehicle is exact, very rational, drives safely, and then they begin to relax, he said. U.S.-based Local Motors has even used 3D printing technology to produce self-driving vehicles. It recently introduced a new minibus called Ollie that can carry up to 12 people. The vehicle allows passengers to call for rides with a mobile app similar to Uber. The company says 75% of the minibus can be 3D printed, and it can be fully assembled in 11 hours. I'm Brian Lynn.
And I'm Ann Ball.
African countries may be best known for their track and field success at the Olympics, but interest in Asian martial arts has grown on the continent. African nations are sending 50 athletes to Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, to compete in events such as Taekwondo and Judo. Three of those athletes represent Ivory Coast. A Korean Taekwondo expert introduced the exercise to Ivory Coast in the 1960s. It is now a popular after-school activity for children. Ivorian Taekwondo competitor Ruth Bogby will be making her second Olympics appearance. She also competed in the 2012 London Games, but lost both her matches. She is 22 and competes in the 67-kilogram division. Mamina Kone and Czech Sise are the other two Ivorian Taekwondo competitors at this year's Games. It will be their first Olympic experience. Taekwondo became an Olympic sport in 2000. Only three Africans have won medals in the event. Ivory Coast has one medal in its Olympic history. Ivorian runner Gabriel Tiako took home a silver medal in 1984 for his second-place finish in the men's 400-meter event. All three of the Taekwondo athletes from Ivory Coast won medals in recent African competitions. The director of the Ivory Coast team says the three athletes are on the same level as the best in the world. The competitors say they are setting an example for the next generation of Ivorian athletes. Musa Berte is 13. He has been doing Taekwondo for 5 years. He says he learned discipline, respect, dignity, and wisdom from his teachers. Berte will be watching the national team compete in Rio. They are examples to follow because they are champions, and they come from Ivory Coast, so it encourages us to continue Taekwondo, he said. The Taekwondo competition begins in Rio on August 17th. I'm Dan Friedel.
Bamboo is one of the world's most useful plants. For thousands of years, bamboo has been used in many different ways, from food to medicine to clothing, and in small ways, as a building material. However, bamboo is not often used as a building material in the developed world. It is not made according to officially set measurements or standards. It simply grows in the ground. A professor at the University of Pittsburgh in Pennsylvania is trying to change that. The professor and his students are testing the strength of bamboo. They are testing its radial load, or how much pressure or weight it can take before breaking. That pressure was too much. Kent Harris is a professor at the University of Pittsburgh. Harris says that testing methods for bamboo need to be the same for all. They need to be standardized. Building codes everywhere require strict standardization of tests for all materials, such as timber or concrete. But tests for bamboo have not been standardized. Standardizing test methods for bamboo will help to bring the plant into common use or the mainstream. It will also give engineers and builders around the world a dependable standard, or, as Harris says, a testing method they can hang their hat on.
If we standardize it, if we provide essentially documentations, test methods, which the engineers can hang their hat on, we bring the material into the mainstream.
Harris sees bamboo as a great building material. First, it is strong. The strength of at least three species of bamboo is similar to steel. Besides its strength, Harris says that bamboo has other features that make it a great building material. He says it is resilient, meaning it keeps its shape and strength even under pressure.
It's a remarkably strong material, remarkably resilient. It's optimized to be a very tall, obviously bamboo material. Something like this might grow 20 meters, and it supports its own weight, and of course it also supports huge wind loads.
Bamboo also grows quickly. Bamboo that is suitable for construction needs much less resources than wood. The harvest cycle of bamboo is about 3 years. Softwoods such as cedar, pine, and spruce have a harvest cycle of about 10 years. And hardwoods that come from flowering plants such as oak, maple, and walnut need more than 30 years. Harris says bamboo poles could be joined together into columns for building floors and roofs. In many countries, they are already used for wall panel structures. Bamboo is widely used as food for panda bears. It is also used for furniture or man-made building products such as flooring and window covers or blinds. However, for building, bamboo is not used much outside its native growing area. That is mostly because of its round shape. But there are other reasons, too. Bamboo, it seems, has an image problem. People think, or have the mentality, that bamboo is a low-quality building material.
It is viewed in much of the world as, well, bamboo's for poor people. And so there's that mentality that we're trying to get over.
I'm Ann Ball.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.